My name is Marcelo Borges do Russo, and this is the interview with Benny Wenda and Maria Wenda. And today is Monday, the 16th of November of 2015. So first I would like to ask you, Benny, to tell your full name, the place where you were born, and the year.
My name is Benny Wenda. I'm from West Papua. I born in Central Highlands of West Papua called Wamena, and I was born 1975.
My name is Maria Wenda. I come from West Papua. I was born in Wamena, which is Central Highland of West Papua.
And the year?
And I was born in the year 1980.
Okay, thank you very much. And Benny and Maria, before we start, or before we continue, I would like to tell you that I had the opportunity of visiting and traveling in West Papua in 2012. It was for a little bit over 1 month, almost 1 month and a half. And for me, it's a great honor to meet you both today and hear more about your life journey. Thank you very much. I would like to start greeting you in the way I have learned to greet many, many people in the heart of the Balin Valley.
Thank you.
I'd like to go over the sea to your land, and would like you both to tell about the place where you were born. You just said you come from the Central Highlands, but could you tell more about the location, the place where you were born, and how was growing up in West Papua?
Yeah, I was born in a little village called Penongalo, but when missionary came, they give the name a pyramid, and because that mountain is like the pyramid, you know, the shape of the mountain. So I was born there, and a village boy, and at the time I didn't know. At the time, I never think other people out there, only my clan and my tribe, and that's all. And just trying to be, you know, be good boy, and how to learn gardening and make friends, and you know, help with my parents and go to, you know, village, another village to learn and catching up everything to, you know. But one time, I didn't know. Yeah. I never seen the different, you know, any other people, like any different color, and just. But one time, my mom and my auntie go into garden, and in the morning we go into the garden, and then we passing, then we seen the military, Indonesian military came toward us, and my mom. Grab my auntie and then put it in the bag, and then this military just came straight to my mom, and they hold my mom, and they look at my auntie and that young girl, so they beat my mom in front of me, and that's the first I remember. And then my mom was fell down, and my auntie was the military holding them up and take the clothes off, and told my auntie to wash the body, and came back and raped in front of my eye. This is until today I never forget.
And you were very young.
That's very young, yeah. It was about 4 or 5 years old at the time. And so it's really, until today I never forget, and my two aunties was passed away. I never seen them again, and because of trauma, and so, you know, I never seen them again. My mom too, she was internal bleeding, and she passed away, and so yeah, that's the strongly remember. But my dad too. My dad was he was Indonesian military suspicious here, like freedom fighter, and every time they beat him up, and you know, so that's if I'm growing up in that situation, I thought I'm happily with the nature, happily with, but then my life was difficult, and I was really from the early age I seen this, you know, atrocity committed by Indonesian military, and then I growing up, like from that year until 5 years, grow up in the bush, you know, and many people are dying, and all of my friends, same age as me, has died because of malaria, because of hunger. That's, it's not good life, but it's really bad, and I seen it myself. And then growing up until 1982, loyal to Indonesia, from the bush, surrender to Indonesia, and then one time, Indonesian military come to our villages, and they see the older girls, and you know, just in the parents, you know, seen it, and the girl took it in the military post, and sometimes they rape in front of their parents. That's going on until 1983, and but I growing up that situation, I seen it from the young age until I growing up. Until I went to school, and from high school, junior high school to high school, then from that I seen it, and we are treated differently, and I don't know what going on. I don't know. This is not only happened to me, but any other people, every West Papuan can tell their own story. But then my wife too have own story to tell. But this is what happened to me, and what happened to my family, what happened to my relative, even my uncle and my grandparents. I never seen them, because one time in a place called Kobakma, is one of the we were like a refugee, internal refugee, and many people are dying, and my grandparents he said to my parent that maybe there's many children are dying, but this boy, maybe one day he will remember. Put me under the trees, don't care about me, take care of this boy. My grandparent told my dad that take this boy back to Indonesia, loyal to Indonesia. If you stay in the bush or in the jungle, in the forest, he will be die. This boy will die. So before that, you have to take care of him and back to Indonesia. Whatever happened, my spirit will, you know, take care of you. And they took me back to Indonesia. So then we loyal to Indonesia. Since then, I went to school, I study, and it's trauma still intimidate me myself, you know, I intimidate me until I went to school and high school. One thing that in the people talking about discrimination and racism, and there's many Papuan can tell their own story, but this is only that happened. My wife will tell her own story in the how in the classroom, how the teacher treat the Papuan differently at the time. And I myself, one time in the class, we have many Papuans, not many Papuans, five Papuans in the class, and many of them Indonesia. We went in the class in the morning, early morning. And then the teacher told me, Benny, you grab that chair, and sitting next to that girl, she's Indonesian, she's a Javanese girl. And then I grab my, I hold my books, and then before I put my book, I smile this girl to make sure that she's happy. And then she look at me, and she like spit at my face. And at the time, my feeling was maybe I'm smell, you know, maybe I come from village, so I'm smell, and you know, I just hold my books and really upset, but I just sitting there. What happened? As soon as I left the school, and the next morning I went to the shop, and I bought the shop, and I washed in the river three times, make sure that she's happy, you know. I washed my body yesterday, or I was smell, then I have really confidence, and on the way I have to, you know, if I sweaty maybe smell, so I have to make sure that I'm not sweaty, my body not sweaty. I went in the class, same class, and I look at, I confident, yesterday I was male, I didn't wash properly. So I washed 3 times, so she's happy. And then I put my books, and then I, you know, happily, and then, you know, confidently, before she, I look at her, and then she look at me. She just stood up, and she spit second time in my face. Then I wipe my face, and everybody like laughing at me, and they bang the table. I pointed my finger, look, I have a 5 finger, I'm a human being, I'm a man, and you know, I have an eye, ear, and everything like human being, like you, but my color I cannot change. And whatever you call me, primitive or stone age man, this is who I am, and I think that first time was, then I look at why they treated this way. And then I look back, what happened in my village, what happened in my auntie, and why? That's my brain and my mind's open, everything, you know. Why I'm in the bush 5 years, and why my family was killed, and helicopter dropped the bomb in my village, and my leg was broken because hiding in the bush, and my fell down, and my leg was broken. So then remind everything, you know, what happened. So I think that the beginning of the, I said, this is never happened in the another generation. This has happened to me. Okay, that's it. And then I stood up from there. I went to university. I studied politics. And then I understand everything, the history. If one thing that I couldn't find history, what happened, how Indonesia invaded our country, how Indonesia claimed West Papua is part of Indonesia, and the other hand, they treat us like animal. They treat us like subhuman. They treat us like differently. Because we are different color, because we are different. So then I trying to find out why their treatment are happening to me. But then sometime all day my friend too, they same. But they cannot talk, they scared. And some of the parents, they know history. And I don't know, because my parents not well educated. They are village people. And I myself, I don't know why. But other part of the Papua, West Papua, like people in the coast, they really interact with the outside world. They know the history and what happened when Indonesia arrived. But I'm from mountain, and I'm from, you know, cut off from outside world, and very difficult to. But I slowly discover and to understand about why this, and that's what my earliest memory until I'm. You know, I came here, but that's in the earliest memory I remember. Yeah.
Okay. Maria, would you like to tell us as well a little bit more about the place where you were born and how was growing up there?
I was born in a village called Pugima.
I've been there.
Oh, right.
Go on. Pugima.
Pugima. That's when my childhood, I grew up there until when I was 17, and I grew up with my parent, and I went to school from the village to the town. So it kind of, it's very like peaceful and very independent, and we were like. And then as soon as when the military coming into the village, and then it was that where the place district, sometimes they program called Abri Masuk Desa. It means the military drop them there for
military,
like
coming to the village.
Yeah, kind of things. So they set up there for months, and sometimes we were like scared, and they saw they like a woman and the kind of things they trying to call, and really scary. The time I was like 7 years old, or like 5 or 6 years old, but I remember that older sister, or like older one, like 12, 15, 16, or like 10, they've been raped, and it was really scary. And we really, really like the parent, they cannot do anything because of the if they're trying to come and the military kick them or like beat them in front of them, our eyes. So sometimes we just run from the school, run off from the elementary, where they, and run. We always run. So two of the auntie, I think they died because of the, they never had a baby, one of them, because of the raped underage. And I heard that she passed away. That a few of them, I think they still like a trauma, that kind of feelings. And so from there, my mom, so now I moved from the elementary to the second, what they call that? High school.
Yeah, junior high school.
Junior high school. So from the village to the town, it's about like, it took about 2 hours or 3 hours. So I have to, like, my mom always come with me every single day. So I kind of like, none of the friends, they don't, their parents, they don't come with them, only my mom. So I felt like kind of nervous, not nervous, but like embarrassed myself. Like, why my mom come always with me and I can go myself? And I don't understand that my mom trying to protect me and she worry about me a lot. And then until from there, like she every morning she had to come with me after drop me in school, where the nearby town was Saput, where there. So from there she went back and then come back, pick me up, that kind of things, all every morning. And then I was so worried about her, so I have to move from the secondary high school. I moved in the afternoon one, but the same things, she didn't change. So I felt like she always come with me and bring me there and always come and pick me up. And then one time I told my mom, I said, why you, I'm so angry to her, like, why you come and none of my friend, the parent, they don't come. And she said that, I'm doing this for, not for me, for your future. So then I realized that she was worried about, you know, about me, and I was, remember what happening, what the, in the military that did to
auntie.
Yeah, auntie, and then also elders, not my sister but relative, and remember all of them, and it was like kind of fears, and we have facing in school as well. There's discrimination among Papuans and then also Japanese students, and the teachers, of course, teachers. Whenever they separate class, so Papuan separate and Japanese, so kind of discrimination. And if you don't do kind of a, like a, no homework, but like wrong, the teacher like beat us and the kind of things like, you Papuan, you stupid, and like you big eater and your brain is sweet potatoes, the kind of things. So every time the kind of thing like put us like really down, so we felt like we cannot do anything. And every time, and we felt like we just give up, the kind of things, felt like a kind of give up. And then until the boys, this is from the coast and highlands, you know, all, everybody, but they, because of the teacher told us that the Papuans, you are stupid, your brain is never clever enough. So kind of praising the Japanese and Papuans at that time is really, really hard situation. But the boys, more than girls, at that time, so the boys really angry, and they had a, they had something planned for the trying to make cause a problem with the teacher. So they make a massive plan for the teacher motorbike. They went and they before teacher always this teacher always go home later after every other teacher will go home. So she was there. And then they boys took the nails and then they hammer on, they pluck the motorbike
tire,
both sides. So then they watch out from the for distance. So the teacher, after they start the motorbike, trying to run, start, they couldn't move. The tire is flat. So then the boy came out, all the Papuans, like from the coast and Holland together, and they beat the teachers, like bleeding, and the teacher came out, that kind of thing. And it was, and because that time all the teachers left, nobody there. But then somebody watched from the store, little store, and they called the police, and these boys, they kicked them out from the school. And I think they moved somewhere, we don't know, but so kind of give them like wanted or kind of things. So they moved, maybe different district. You never see them again, those boys. But that's what happened, discrimination against Papuans. So then remember what happening around us when you see the military is not safe, and then also and we see them about independence, that kind of things. And there is always the issue, that OPM issue, that kind of things in the village around. And if you do this, then you will be dead, that kind of things. And 1st of December is independence, West Papua Independence Day. There is always morning stuff, like in the right where my village, but on top of the mountain. So somebody raised it there. But people go closer, it disappears, the flag. But if you can see from the other side, and where my village is, you can see them, the minister flag rise. So, yeah, kind of things. And then also, there's the also one chief, everybody knows story, so he's the one later raised that flag. So kind of everybody knows what happened that time when the missionaries was there, the flag raised. But they don't talk about this. If you talk about this, kind of, you know, you dead or you life. So we kept silence about this. And then we see around people beating up, you know, that kind of things. People even protest or kind of people beat them in front of I sometimes, but you can't complain. So everybody work together, and you know, Papuan feel like a voiceless. Just police and military and everything, they work together. So, you know, people, yeah, Papuan, they don't have any voice. So that time I seen, and then until I moved because of I saw it for my mom, because she take care of me from like a early young age until even secondary school. I said, I think that's enough, because of my mom also, like because of windy, you know, like in women is very windy, when the 3 o'clock already windy, and like really, my mom gets sick, and I'm like, you know, I think something. So I have to make decision for not to stay there. Maybe I can have experience to move to Jaipur, where the capital is. So that's how I met Benny, and I saw him, and then I started to study university. I met him, he was leading the people, the student protest. And so that's how I met him. Until I didn't finish university, but he asked me at that time, he finished university, and he told me that we had a commitment together to fight for our people. And the first thing he asked me that after he finished, he called me. So I didn't, he told me that I want to tell you that, honest, that I got a degree, I got degree, but I don't want to work for Indonesia government, but I present this degree to the people in the bush who fight for freedom. Will you come with me? And because I don't want, before something happen or complaint come, I need to know that from you that you know. So then I said, "Well, I'm ready to come, whatever it is." He said, "I will. You know, it will. It's not easy. It's not going to easy, but we're going to suffer in the bush and somewhere. So, were you willing to come with me?" I said, "Yes, we go stand together to fight our people." So that's how we commit together for this struggle until here.
Mm.
Yeah. Thank you.
And moving forward in time to the moment that Benny came to the UK, I'd like just to ask something about the time before that big, there were many big life events in your journey, and that was certainly a big mark in your life, coming to the UK. I'd like to ask before that, of course, at that point you were already living in Jayapura, studying, had a degree, but through your life, what did you know about the UK and about the British people? What and also, what did you know about the first contacts between people in West Papua and Britain? Or
yeah,
you know, even growing up, as you said.
At the time, I didn't know. Yeah, as I was, my focus is I study after study that Maria already mentioned. After the study, I used the knowledge to fight for the people, and I studied political science, and then I used that knowledge to fight back for our people's right to self-determination. But then the time where I finished, and then my people chose me become a leader, a tribal leader, was the Kotega Tribal Assembly. You already, maybe they will already tell you. I lead that and in the town in Jayapura, so I leading massive movement, and then at the that point, then we had a congress, biggest congress in 2000, and one of the English friends is Mike. He came with Uncle Sam. He said Sam is one of the academic, and he was studying in Jayapura and Paradise. He was lecturer. He came here. I studied MA here, and then he went back. Before that, he asked our friend called Mike. He went back with him, and that was biggest congress. All the tribe come together and ask Indonesian government, we want to independent, and that's where we first declare. And I was directly to leading, and then we formed this PDP, Presidium Dewan Papua. So then after that, we have flag raising ceremony. It was 1st of December. And Philip Karma, now he's 15 years, he was chairman, and I was deputy chairman of the flag raising ceremony. And then we were raise the morning stuff like, and because of that crime, and then I was chasing up our Indonesian military, and then me and Maria moved hide into bush in the other side of the border, and also that's exodus, some of the Papuans exodus to Papua New Guinea,
the refugee. Yeah.
And then while we there, and Maria, including Maria too, we're hiding there near the border. I was hiding because Indonesian military want to arrest me, and want to, you know, if the elder told me, if you stay, they will be killed, because this is very dangerous now, and you have to run away and hide there sometime, and then if situation settle down, you come back. Then, you know, later on, I coming back. I left Maria and in the refugee in Papua New Guinea in the Wanimo, and I came back. Where I was arrested by.
No, that's after a few years.
Hmm?
You went back.
Yeah.
We left the 1st of December, the night time. We went across the border to Papua New Guinea with the people, and then we left, and then the things happened, the accident happened in the 9th or 7th, between that. And we were at the side already.
Yeah, then after...
Until 1 year, yeah?
Yeah.
You went back.
Hide about 2001, I came back. I was hiding in the bush.
2002, you went back?
2002.
Yeah, 2002. You went back in the in the Jaipur.
2001.
In the refugee.
I hiding, and then 2002. A few times I'm coming, but secretly. But this one, the, you know, the public meeting, and I will. They invite me to come to meeting with all everybody. And they thought the situation already, you know, settled down. They're not chasing you anymore. So then what happened before that, Indonesia was already alert in every corner from the, I think, nearly 1 year. So then I coming in, and there was the military already intelligent everywhere and already alert. So as soon as I arrived, and they caught me in Jaipura. So I was arrested, and since then, I was in prison in Abepura, in Jaipura, and then I moved in Abepura, and they charged me three charges. One, I have a 2 passport. Second, I was insisted attacking Abepura police station, and third, I the flag raising and the leading all the massive movement against Indonesian government. So that was my crime. And even I'm not there. And even that incident, I was already left. I was left about 7 days before. And then they charged and 25 years, and I was in and out in the court, and no witness, no evidence what the crime is. They just accused me with
eight
this.
Eight times
I went to the court, and no evidence. And one thing that one of the lawyer, it's called Jennifer Robinson, she was witness sitting in there and all the time, and just trying to put me in the prison for a very long time because of leader, and because of if I free, then I will continue to lead massive movement. So, then one time, you know, prosecutor came before I went into court, and he told me, Benny, one thing that we need to discuss, just accept it, all these charges, and, you know, just accept it, and we can work it out, you know, just formality. That they told me.
Excuse me, who told you this?
A prosecutor.
Yes.
He came to my cell, and before just ready to court, inside the court. Even that beforehand, also police intelligence and military and police, and they came to one night in the middle of night, 11 o'clock, they took me from the prison, and then this meeting, and then they told me, Benny, there is some Papuan, we are out there working with us, so why don't you surrender and, you know, just give up what you fight, what you believe, give up, and we can work, we can facilitate everything you need.
Other Papuan leaders.
Like other Papuans, they mentioned a few names. And I said this, I cannot telling that my people just played of rice, but better I'm dying, you know. That's my, you know, dying for because of my people. That's better I die rather than accept, you know, this offer, just plate of rice. And then one of the head of intelligence banged the table, he's angry, he's just leaving out. So that's, that continue, and this prosecutor came to my cell, and he offered that same thing. I refuse everything. So then the end, what happened? The 3 times they tried to assassinate me in the prison. That's why one time if I stay, I would be killed. So better I escape. So then one time I break the ventilation in the middle of night. And my plan was, my plan 3 o'clock at night, but if something happened, something magic thing, because...
But someone came to your door, you see?
No, that's the head of the head of the prisoner guard came to my door in the night time, about 3 o'clock. He's knocked the door, and then I was shocked and I was sweaty, and I woke up and I just scared, and he's knocked the door and he's trying to open, but the door didn't open. I woke up and who is it? Are you Benny? He said, yes, I'm Benny. And I said, why you ask me? You put give order to put this room. You know this is my room. Why you ask me? And then he said this word, you already fed. Fat mean the Papuan roast the pig,
what?
And when pig get fat and ready to kill. And that's my image. I was, while he said this word, my body was sweaty and
scared.
Very scary. Oh, I just my feeling, this is day ready. That's about Wednesday, around Wednesday night. And Tuesday, Friday, I was thinking this word. Oh, if I stay, because they killed Teis Eloi, was 2001 assassinated by Indonesian Special Force.
Next target.
Yeah,
yes.
In Sentani. And then in next my target. Mind, it's because the... I was arrested under the name of the Operasi, Matoa Operasi, yeah? And after he was killed. That's why the this Matoa Operasi is
the
was next target. And the rumor Dracula, and that's... So then my mind, okay, this they want to kill me. Then that's what, Wednesday, Tuesday, and Friday, my heart was questioned, this is... And then before that, everybody was talking to me that... The intelligent every day is coming in and out in this,
even
in the guard.
When I came, two eyes, they refused the food. So I was worried about it. I tried to bring the food for him, and they said, well, they already closed. But it was still the 6 o'clock, so it's still open. They said, they refused. They said, you can give us, we can give it to him. And I said, no, I won't give it any food from me to you, into your hand. I don't trust, so I rather bring back the food home than give it to them. So because I knew that they're going to poison him, you know, through the food. So what happened?
Yeah. Then last, yeah, it's a Saturday night. I decide if I stay, better while I escape, they shoot me. That's no problem. That's my decision. So then, in the afternoon, I was thinking, okay. Then I planning to escape, but there's no way to get out. So they lock me up, and then there is little ventilation. There's already someone trying to break it, but didn't break. So the bathroom, in the toilet. So I break that ventilation. Before I went out, there's something, you know, about 12 o'clock. But this is 12 o'clock, people shouting and screaming. The guard is playing
Saturday.
Card and... Everybody busy. Why I had to escape? And my plan of 3 o'clock, something like my ancestor tell me, go, 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 something. And my body was sweaty. And then same time, and you know, I wrote the note. I have a note. Wrote the note after holding that note. Like then I said, on behalf of my people, my land, God, I will leave you with the tears, but one day I will coming back. If I go this room until I free, I don't know where I'm going, but I'm coming back with the good. For I living with you, with the tears, my ancestor, my land, my forest, my mountain, everything I mentioned. After this, what happened?
And God, I give my life to
you.
Yeah,
I gave my life to you.
Your
and
hands.
I want to ready to go. And then like, suddenly, dog is barking, dog outside.
Animals.
And then animal barking. And then
the
wind blow. Same time. First, the dog barking. One dog barking, another dog barking. Abepura, it's a mountain. Yeah, you see that, Abepura. And then
even
the wind blow.
Even Papua New Guinea, if refugee. All the, like, a refugee, the tennis break that
wind
night.
Blow at the time. And all the banana,
nature.
Everything, like, this all fell down. And then all the prisoner is shouting same time, like dancing and
put the music volume.
Then just go up there and break the ventilation and jump on. And then it's every corner is a tower, and the light is automatic, 5 seconds. I scrolling, and idea is in the corner. There is a tower, it's a guard in every tower. So that I didn't count that guard. The glass from inside, you can see outside. Outside, you can't see it. There's someone there or not. And just facing that, scrolling, and then I found a piece of wood this long. And against that corner. And then jump on top. If that man, he hold the gun, if he shoot me, I die or he die, I didn't count it. My heart already out there. And jump on top and then. I have this scar here, still there. Still there. This is scar there. This is before. Jump on and then the bottle is sticking in my hand. Like I was trying to scream in. But then I know this person will
hear.
So he will hear. So just bottle already stick in my hand, already bleeding. I just jump on the other side. So that's I break the ventilation and jump on the other side. And
the first history in the 50 years.
Yeah.
Never
so
escape.
First time.
Yes.
And then that's why in the escape alive.
And Indonesia invited.
In the first in the history in the West Papua of struggle is I have break the ventilation and
all
leader.
Die in the prison.
All die
poison.
In the prison. Yeah, all the poisons or. Then get the Papua New Guinea, and I left Maria and their daughter, first one. They didn't know I escaped. I was just lose completely, I forget. And then went to the Papua New Guinea. And
no, after you left, they also came after us to look after, to come for us.
Then after I escaped, and they were looking for Maria and my daughter, she 1 year old. And then after they came, and then they... All the our people back home, they smuggled them to cross the border. So I got a fake passport in Papua New Guinea. Then I jumped on the plane, I left them, and they didn't know where I am, and they thought I'm hiding in the bush, or they killed, and they didn't know until I came to UK. And then I wrote the notes that I'm here, sent back to Papua New Guinea. Then they got my message, and she knows my writing, handwriting. She knows I'm safe. And then, after that, after 3 months later, I asked my British friend I need my wife and daughter to come here. And then they came, they took them, smuggled them to came here, and then we reunions and then apply, citizens. And so that we started. Then
you met a hetero.
Yeah, we met in Heathrow, United. Yeah, it's very difficult at the time, and there's a lot of story, but that's just, I think that I didn't know. Nobody told me in the UK, is it cold? Nobody, I jump on a plane with the, just didn't have a jacket, just small bag, and, small jacket, not jacket, just T-shirt, and then... As soon as I arrive, one of the friends, he went to airport, and then it's Richard Reins. He went to airport and he kind of waiting, and the immigration asked me a lot of questions. I thought they will arrest me and deport me. I couldn't speak any English at all, just using the symbol and sign.
Were you on your own?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And you mentioned that you got this passport and when you were in Papua New Guinea. Which nationality was that?
Fake passport, Papua New Guinea nationality.
From Papua New Guinea.
Yeah, Papua New Guinea. Because
so you made the trip on your own. There was no...
Nobody.
There wasn't a friend or...
No,
someone.
No.
You got already passport, but you get visa enter the UK. But then that the same day, next day, the Papua New Guinea citizen enter the UK. He's free.
Yes.
That's the first time he opened.
It's a spirit, from the
work.
From the prison to Papua New Guinea, and then you have to apply visa. But holding the passport. But the next morning, Friday, a Papua New Guinea citizen, you don't need visa into UK. That first Papua New Guinea citizen, even a fake passport, I came. It's the first
and
person.
The
they have just changed the law.
Changed
so
the law,
the
and next morning
world.
I jump on a
work.
Plane. So that's everything. And nobody else. It is the first time I jump on a big plane. I never traveled to Java before,
Just from Wamena
to Jaipura, that's all. And Timika, and that's all.
And did you know about anyone else from West Papua coming to the UK before? To London.
No, I think one of them, my uncle, is Sam, but he never told all the story, and he didn't tell me the story. But because we never met, you know, sit down and talk because we're too busy with the politics. And then, so no, nobody told me the house UK is cold. I thought the same, you know, hot and hot here.
But what happened when your friend holding something?
Yeah, I arrived in airport and then he holding the my name, Benny Wenda, and the immigration let me, okay, you, there is some, they know I'm coming, so they already informed the immigration, then this is Benny Wenda coming, and we're waiting outside, and then they...
Did you have a kind of an invitation letter or something?
No, like no, no, not at all. Only they inform, because I told my friend in Papua New Guinea, can you call them? When I leave Singapore and jump on a plane, you know exactly the time because the ticket already have. So they know exactly, and then they inform our friend here. This guy already went to West Papua, and then they know me. And this I call a brother because when I was in prison, he jumped on the Indonesian embassy in London, and he was arrested, and he's... Even president of Indonesia came ten Downing Street, and
okay.
He jumped on the car. He's a little bit already make trouble. So, and then he knows I'm coming. They already waiting. So then, immigration told me that one thing that why you come here, and I couldn't say asylum, and they hold me like 5 o'clock in the morning until 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I couldn't say word asylum at the time, and the one thing that one. Africans, they lock. They few people lock up, nearly the deport. So they lock up in there, and they came and asked this guy, "Why you come here?" And he said the word asylum. And then I seen the immigration note, took the note really seriously. And then 15 minutes later, immigration came and asked, "Why you come here?" And then I remember that man say word asylum something. I didn't say properly asylum, but. Just say, let's say it, that word, what happened? I say asylum, something like that. And then immigration told me, why you didn't tell us that? Then they took the note and then
so
they...
That's the moment where you told them that your
yes, asylum
from Papua New Guinea
didn't
was...
They
no, you told that you were coming from West Papua at this point.
They already got all the documents.
Okay.
And they know, and because... or everybody told them that my background and they already have it.
But the word
and
asylum.
Only word asylum,
he doesn't
they
know.
Want to, for me, I have to say word asylum. Yeah,
he
asylum. So I didn't say because I too much, you know, the question and many questions, then I confused to say that word and I didn't know that word too. So that's first word I learned in asylum in that. And then they let me out, and then when I coming out, and this friend holding my name, Benny Wenda, and then I just walking, and then the automatic door, he's holding my name, and I saw my name, I thought this is Indonesia waiting for me, and I run inside, run back. I just worry because someone waiting for me to arrest me, so that's why I just run back. But this guy said, Benny, wah, 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 it's me, something like that, my language. We met in Wamena and Jayapura, so he's mentioned many times, and then I know this, oh, okay.
You break the barrier.
And then I saw him, oh, it's Ryan, and so I jump on
the barrier,
and that now it's iron, that time just rubber. So I just break the, you know, jump on the barrier and hug. So they took me out, and then another screaming because, you know, very cold. And as soon as we come out, it's very cold, and I screaming. And then because why? And it's cold, and always gave me jumper, and then I don't have any jumper. So that's really shocking because, like, it's culture shock, you know. I didn't expecting the call and like going to that kind of place and nobody told me. So yeah, then
even when you're sleeping.
Yeah, sleeping. I. He didn't explain how, because the bed is very nice. You know, it's covered very nice and pillow on top. And then I thought just sleep or no, actually go inside, but I didn't went inside. So and then he said, "Okay, are you sleep well?" Yes, I sleep well, but I was screaming. And then one time I saw he didn't so close his door, and I just say, "How is sleep comfortably, and why you didn't feel cold?" And but actually he's. That blanket, he had to go inside and they cover.
The blanket then?
Because in West Papua we never have blanket and go inside and, you know, just sleep like that. So that, but because very night, flat and, you know, but, you know, yeah, that's really confused. But, yeah, that's my experience.
Well, what were some other memories of your arrival in London and your first months in the UK?
Yeah, it's one thing that he took me to London, and from North London he took me to, and we jump on the train. This is first time, and then in King Cross, and he said, "Okay, Benny, now we going to underground," and I said, "What? Underground? I don't want to go underground because." How can you breathe, you know? I thought it's underground. It's, I'm not a rat. I'm a human being. I don't want to go under. He took me, but I just go up. We go by bus. I don't want to go there. Go underground. And because it's quicker, but he a little bit argument. And he said, no. And then he has to, we have to go by bus. And then, so then next time, and I saw the building, and he said, "Are you see surprised there are a lot of building?" And yeah, I surprised, but it's like mountain, you know, like this is mountain in my mountain. They move here, like something like that. And he said, "Surprised, yeah, really confused. A lot of people are walking around like ants, you know, like crossing each other, running, and also." And then next. Then a few days later, we also coming back to London Underground, and maybe I just try it, and we sitting in there. And then one thing that I shocked, because everybody facing each other, and then everybody not talking, you know, just reading the newspaper, and just trying to smile, but everybody like very, you know, nobody smile on you, and, you know, say hello, and a little bit. Oh, a little bit frustration, and normally hello and something, but smile or sometime, but they didn't smile and just look at the newspaper and then jump out and in and something like. So that's also confusing me, you know. That's the first experience, and just carry on. And nobody smile on you, just face like facing each other, but nobody. So that's a little bit. Shock, you know. Yeah.
What would your first memories be, Maria?
Of
the time I arrived in London and the first weeks, first months in the UK.
Oh yeah, first memory is from Papua New Guinea when I had English breakfast. It was one of the friends who went there, British English friend. He went there, he said, well, we're going to have English breakfast. I was so happy, like, kind of, you know, like, really, really, because of we, like, escaping and kind of things, and in our mind, it's like somewhere we're going to safe place going. And as soon as he said English breakfast, I just, like, felt like going to something, you know, like, food, amazing, so then... When I tested, I felt like I really, really, you know, I'm going to this place. So then from there, we on the airplane, it was like first memories like salad and everything is like uncooked. I mean salad and everything, and the paper, everything kind of like lettuce. I said, no, I'm not going to eat this one. That I never forgot that. I said, no, this is not, they cannot give me this uncooked food. So why I in Port Moresby, I ate nice one, cook one like sausages and kind of mashed potato, kind of really nice one. But this one is something different and cool. I thought maybe they're angry or, you know, like kind of, why this kind of thing? So I was like, I took the all the salads and I put, I took it and I went to the toilet and I put it in the bin. But I was so hungry, and then the guy, he just ate it, all it, everything. I said, how can he eat? He, you know, like kind of, this is not, and it's not animal food. I was thinking, no, we're not a cow or like sheep or, you know. So maybe we should eat cook food. But then, well, anyway, I just took it all the food and threw in the bin. And I was so hungry on the airplane until arrived in Heathrow. And from there, the same thing. They kind of like a sandwich, but put in the same things. So why the same thing? I want something different, kind of hungry. And so it just kind of... I was so hungry and I didn't even eat. Then hungry from the like 5 o'clock in the morning until 7 o'clock or 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they said, "Are you hungry?" And I said, "No," because I knew that they're going to give that kind of food. So then from there they're waiting from the outside. So we went out. And the same thing, cold as well, really, really cold. And I was like, oh my goodness, felt like it's okay. And then I got like a two jumpers and double jacket and then two head and really, really cold. And in my head, like it's shaking, but well, it's for the safety, it's okay. And then second thing is the trees. There's no trees, I mean no leaves, there's only trees, but they're kind of like dead trees. How can people live here, like survive, and no trees?
Yeah.
And then how can we run away, you know, kind of hide this place, if the Indonesians come and get us or something like that? I felt like, and then first question I asked him, and he said, he doesn't know about that, until we together find out. We went
6 months later.
6 months later, we find out together. So we went really cold. So we went in the high the mountain, Brighton, on top, to get some wood, and we together cut the wood. You know, we thought it's dry.
Yeah.
But actually, still, you know, inside, it's still alive.
Yeah.
So then, when we cut it, there's no like dry. And then we ask one of our friends. He said. No, they're sleeping.
They're sleeping.
And I was like, what? They're sleeping.
Trees sleeping.
And after 6 months, 6 months they will come out. What?
They wake up.
Oh, what is that? Like, kind of surprising, you know, like different, the way we came from, like,
yeah.
You know. Never died like that. I mean, we don't have a season. So that's the first. And, and then once, I bought one of the friends, he bought the one who stayed with us. He brought the salad again, the same thing again. He bought the lettuce, the big one. So I thought it's a cabbage. And then we, a little bit argue. He said, well, I said, I'm going to cook the cabbage. He said, no, that's not it. You're not allowed to cook. I said, no, I'm going to cook. We just like, kind of argue with each other, and he said, no, when you cook, it's kind of like a small, like this, because of in English, also like, I said, no, I'm not going to eat uncooked food, because this is the cabbage, and we, in Papua, we do cook. And he said, no. And then he said, okay, you win. Okay, you won, and you do it, and I will see. So I kind of, I just like, no, you cannot. I cut it and then cooked it. It's really, really like small. It's not a kind of cabbage. So I felt like from there I learned.
When you were talking about the weather and the trees, do you remember which month you arrived here?
March.
In March.
March.
Yeah, March. So,
that's when you met in the UK. March.
So
it was very cold.
Very cold. Mm-hmm.
How did you feel then when the summer came?
The summer came because of...
it's changing, so I
it's changing. In the course of a friend, he told us that the tree is still sleeping. So when a few months' time, they wake up again. So then we're watching. When we saw them, wow, they're beautiful. The blossom is beautiful, and then the tree getting, you know, greens. And then we went climb the mountain. And
yeah,
we
always climb the mountain.
Yeah, we want to see the
green.
And then we wait until 6 months. And when we climb a mountain, it's really, really like all the green cover and no houses. And that's really happy. You like feel like, whoa. That's good. But the first time we feel like sad, how can the people survive? How can they garden animals and the kind of thing feelings? It's really shocking. I mean, the culture and also the food as well. So, yeah, and then, yeah, there's so many things we learn, kind of people asking. In Papua, we don't do like, are you hungry? That kind of things. We just provide the food, you know. Let's go eat them, the kind of things. You don't asking. You hungry, Lord? Because it's so weird that you ask them, as people like, are you hungry? Of course you say, no, I'm not hungry. But when we came here, like, one of friends said, are you hungry? He said, no. Even both of us really, really hungry. And until we went home, and we cooked, and he said, why are you cooking? You said you don't. You said that you're not hungry. Well, we said, you know the custom. You don't allow to ask him, you know? We're still hungry. But you in here different. You have to say, you're hungry, hungry. When friend asking, you have to say, oh, you have tea, you need to ask, you know? Yeah, that kind of thing we learn.
Yeah.
So many, yeah.
And could you tell me a little bit about the first interactions you had with people here, let's say with neighbors, or the first people you met in the UK, and your interactions with members of different communities as well?
Yeah, I think as soon as we arrive, we have a lot of friends because of my work and the campaign, and everybody like, you know,
we have
all the family and all the English friends and they're surrounding us, and they, so also I'm campaigner, so everybody like, you know, get everybody already. And also we, as soon as we arrive and we have to interact with other group and we speaking even the broken English, but we have a lot of friends. And then also we started, Maria already started composing the music and the song because she's dead for her. So then we perform, and then that's a lot of friends, and you know, also a lot of friends. So even culturally were very difficult, but I think because of we work and those activists are same belief, so then we're able to interact, and even some culture, and it's very difficult to understand, and in terms of language, in terms of, you know, culture different, but only through our work we just carry on what we do. We perform here, there, and all the friends are like trying to support, and
a kind of family. I mean,
yeah, it's like we become a family and friends, and
like adopt us as a
adoptive
family. Yeah.
Family,
really,
like our friend called Mike Atkin. He's from the beginning, and until he went to West Papua, came back, and that like become a family. You know, like second parents. Become like second parent there until today. And so then there's a lot of friends surrounding, and we're able to singing, and everybody like interested, and I think that we made a lot of friends. And yeah, but I think this is because of our life, that the campaigner, so I think we never we have every day people come in our house every minute, so and our house is open. Also, yeah, I think that's it's very difficult to building the everyday life, like looking for job or looking for house or something. But our aim, our mission is to campaign and to free our people. So only our dream is how to free our people. That's all. We're not thinking about how we can survive or how, you know, because that's our mission. So then our friends are always support, okay, you come perform here, this, that. That's from before, beginning, even with difficult.
Yeah,
I think that until today, you know, we are not, you know, we didn't have a time for, you know, holiday, whatever, but it's a 24 hours job.
All my, my friend, they always told me that, why can't you tell your husband, stop everything? And I said, what do you mean? That kind of, you know, and
take holiday.
Take times and with your family and go to holiday, you know, I mean, like kind of travel somewhere and enjoy your life. And I said, well, until our people free, then I think maybe one day, but not now. And one of the lady, she was like, she was crying for, I think, something for her daughter, something problem, because her husband died with the diagnostic. So she was crying about thinking about her husband, and I was like, because of she cried in front of, you know, all of us women, different country, we met like bicycle women group in Oxford, so I joined them, and she was crying, and I cannot let her, you know, and I was crying for her, with her, and she said, why are you crying? And I said, well, because you're crying, you know, like, I cannot let you cry like that, you know, in front of, and then she said, well, I should cry for you because you people are more suffering than me. And then I said, I was thinking, why don't you, you know, I always think about you, and why don't you and your husband, tell your husband that you stop everything, like, what do you mean? And he said, political work, and spend time with your kids and travel somewhere like Italy or, you know, holiday. And I said, no, we can't. Maybe one day, but not now. And she was like, cry back to me. And then she went back, as soon as I said, my children, they play some music, like instrument, violins. And she said, I got one for when I was 14, but I never success. So I can give you. And she just went home, and she felt like bad, and why I said this word. And she also, she felt upset, I was upset, like, and then she went and bring that violins. And the one lady said, oh, you bring the peace with the violins. No, 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 because I felt bad. She said, but there are so many women, they always asking, but but it's life, it's very hard when you commit something that to do, you know, when you people dying, and especially when you commitment, it kind of like heavy in your burden, and the promise that you made is never get away. So even wherever you go, it is something that missing. Even there's a good life, a house, and but it's not never gone happy. So unless I think freedom come, maybe that, maybe, you know, can be happy. Because at the moment of people are still dying and crying. So
I think I'd like to ask you now, how is being Papuan or West Papuan in the UK?
I think, I don't know with other people, but we, both of us, we've been, even we here, but a safety reason, we feel safe here. But our heart is always in the back home. We are not feel in here is, oh, very good life, forget it. But we always thinking for our people, because our people need us, need two of us. And also our kids always telling the truth why we here. We here not coming for looking for better life, or we coming here for looking for a good life or better life or house or, you know, make we are rich. No, we here for, we have, we here on the mission, that we always tell the truth to our children. And you be yourself, you know. We here is on the mission. So That's what, and that's why myself and my wife, we always, whatever we do, we always show that people in the UK and people and our children that this is who we are. Like, for example, represent our people, our tradition, our custom. Even, you know, we're here, but we have to put our headdress and, you know, traditional perform and things like that.
Gotcha.
So we be, you know, we kind of, we feel that we are Papuans, so, but we are living different in Europe and different culture, different, but people are accept us as a human being,
British
as a human levels. They are look at us as human. But when you look at where we come from, they look at us as different, subhuman. So that's why, on the other hand, we're proud to be here in the UK, and British people, British government allow us to stay here, and that's freedom to use to educate the people around the world and in the UK why we're here. So I think that's what that we at the moment, yeah.
Your children were born in the UK. How do you pass them? How do you pass the culture and the love for the land? And how you transmit all this to your children? How do you keep your traditions alive here?
Yeah, we almost every perform we educate them. They are also play music with us, and you know they're born here.
I mean, the witness directly. They
are also how we feel, they feel it, you know. How we cry, they also seen it. So also in terms of the education, we also telling the truth. And this is who we are. This is our culture. This is our custom. This is our way of life. This is how people used to live. And because our people is a land is the mother. And forest is supermarket. And that's I always call. And also music. Music, I always call it contain human spirit. So this is human spirit and within the music. So then now our children also pick it up, and now they play with us, you know, dance with us, and two of us. And
so they also seen what we've been doing, and because now internet, you know, available. So the media, the kind of things, and children also, like, they can see what's going on. To their own people, and also they can see what we're doing, and also especially what the father doing, he's traveling, they're also following him, so in the media and the kind of things, newspaper, and they see him, and the understanding, now they're growing, and they study here, and then also they will understand very well that, like 50-50, you know, like, you can adopt British culture as well as Papuan culture, you know. It's not like a heavier the other side and heavier other side, but the balance. So they understand and they feel proud that who they are, where they come from, and they we told them that, you know, it is this only whole islands you represent here, and you must be proud of who you are yourself, that you are Papuan, remember. You can learn the British culture and British, you know, associate, but they remember that where you come from and your root is. So they understand very well.
Yeah, I think.
And they also, they're the member of the band as well. So they also carry on the legacy of the
two of us.
Yeah, so
hopefully.
They're doing the good, like music, dancing, and the kind of things.
Yeah.
So they're also involved.
No, it's okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
And do you know about anyone else, as I asked you before? If you knew about any other West Papuan coming to London before, you said there was maybe a member of the family, and after you came here, do you know about?
Yeah, there's a few
other people coming.
No, there's
or a community.
There's two Papuan
Woman. American.
Before or after?
After.
That's Sarogo and two people arrive. So that's. But.
No, two Papuan women.
Two Papuan women before they leave in here, but we never met. There are three.
We met.
Some of community, but some came here, but then they never come.
We met them one of the. But,
they arrived after you.
Some women live in Brighton, some Papuan women live in Cambridge, and one woman live in Birmingham, but they are married with the English. So
they came up from Englishmen. They have children, I think.
Yeah. But there's some Papua New Guinean, but they live in somewhere in London, some.
When is Sarogo, yeah?
Yeah.
After.
Yeah, sure.
Sarogo came. Yeah. He came here after.
Yeah, one Papuans. After we came, he came later, but he's a refugee as well.
And just to end, could you tell a little bit about the organization, how the work started, or it started long ago?
Yeah.
And
I formed this campaign, Free West Papua, based here in Oxford. Launching in 2005 in Oxford Town Hall, and that's mainly raise the awareness about people of West Papua struggle for independence, and so that we started, and now it's growing, and we also officially office here in this building, and since then we have developed few offices like in Papua New Guinea, in Australia, in Netherlands, in South Africa, so it's growing. Also, we started also our music. It's Lani Singers, that's Maria Lead now, and so this both working together, trying to raise the awareness and educate the people to understand our struggle, our culture, our custom, our traditions, and that's the two is work, kind of working together. And this campaign are starting grow and whole worldwide, and so since then we still working every day, almost our life we just working for the campaigner.
What's the main message of the Lani Singers, and what's also the meaning? I was thinking about that. The name, the choice of the name.
You mean like Nina Legendary? It mean freedom.
So.
Freedom song. So, when we first time came in this country, there's so many people that they don't know where the West Papua is. So that's Papua New Guinea, and it's really hard trying to explain. And the people are trying to talk about politics. They don't want to hear about. And so we start from the singing, write a song. I started, and then we were together. Teaching ukulele how to play, and because I need him as well, begging voice and also some play music. So he did very well, and he know more than me. I got the one key. I teach him one, but he got the more. So even I can't play what he's doing, but it's amazing. He did very well, and he's doing. So we both, I write the song, and we practice, and then sang together, and travel together. So that's how we get the people on the board to support West Papua, and that's my contribution for my people. Because I don't have any skill to presented to the struggle, but this is all the song that we compose is all our journey, how our people suffering, and why we're here, and all the journey, all about his prison, and all of those those things I wrote down into the song.
About our land.
Our land and
forest mountain.
So everything. So then we put in the song. I put in the song and we both singing Troubled. So that's another way to reach people to get in the boat to support West Papua Coast. And then I think that way is more people, more interest. So we use that in the Connors Cave, and then we telling the story. So he starts telling the story, why we're here, what the meaning of the song. And then people more interest about that. And then that's how we began the campaign as well. Mm. And from there, people more find out. And we direct them to the campaign. When they are asking, where you from, and direct them to the website, that kind of thing. So quite successful. And I'm already second city now. So I am trying to do third one. But at the moment, children are in school. So hopefully very soon, I'm going to do writing again. Some of them already done, but few need to be done, so yeah, I'm going to do. But he or sometimes also he was traveling, so no time to practice.
Yeah,
too much politics. I just yeah.
We'll do soon.
Maria, is there anything else you'd like to say?
I think that's all. we're not going to give up until our people free, so I'm going to support as long as I live to support my husband, what he's doing, and then we together carry on and fulfill our commitment that we had first time we met. So I'm holding that until I die. So yeah, we'll stand together until fight for our people, and then we maybe. when we free and we go home, but we need some help. Without people help, we cannot go back to free people. But we need help and support that we can able to go and free to see our family and our friends in West Papua, so we can go free people.
Thank you.
And
Benny, is there anything else you'd like to say?
Yeah, I think every human being is needs help one another. You see. So the West Papua struggle is people out there, they can do, they change this tragedy in West Papua, because we have a lot of learned the experience in other part of the world that people already, help. Like in South Africa, people are fighting for apartheid, anti-apartheid movement, and that's people power. A lot of changing, and now they're free 20 years. In people of East Timor, they're fighting for their independence, and people around the world, they support, they struggle, and my belief that people of West Papua, they struggle for fight for the justice and freedom, their land and their culture, their identity, their political independence. I think that now the time for people out there could contribute their part to support and free them, because the West Papua is a 21st century, they fight for their independence, and they are very unique, this is the culturally identity, and they're very unique, they're very peacefully people, and they're very, very unique. And so I hope that, people of West Papua, they are not any longer the fight themselves, but I think now people out there already here, they cry for help, cry for support, cry for, the people already finding out. So I hope that whether you're, European or African or Asians or, any people can, help to support and free these people. That's really, really important. And then you are make history, and you are part of the making history and history of the people of West Papua. So that's my message. Thank you.
Thank you very much to you both.
Thank you so much.